This Friday and Saturday, the Figaro Project is presenting Camelot Requiem at First and Franklin Presbyterian Church in Baltimore. It's part of their Spire series. With me in the studio are librettist Caitlin Vincent and composer Joshua Bornfield. Welcome.
Thanks, Hello. Diana. Great to be here.
Indeed. Thanks for having us.
This was composed in honor of the 50th anniversary of John F. Kennedy's assassination. And why did the two of you want to write an opera about this?
Well, I thought, you know, 50 years later, it's really interesting to look back and see what has changed about our country and what hasn't. And this was a first lady and president who were such strong supporters of the performing arts and really captured the public imagination and continue to do so. So it was really just begging for an opera. We wanted to honor them in that way.
Camelot Requiem, of course, refers to the fact that the Kennedy presidency has been referred to as Camelot. JFK was a huge fan of that musical,
right.
Certainly. And of course, this is a requiem not just for him, but for an era.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
There's so much material. There are so many stories surrounding the Kennedy administration, the assassination, its aftermath. How did the two of you get together and decide which part of the story to tell?
Well, I've always been really interested in sort of the behind the scenes aftermath of what happened. So much of history focuses on the bare bones of what happened, the Grassy Knoll, Jack Ruby, that sort of stuff. But what really interested me was the idea of John F. Kennedy's personal staff, family, you know, the Johnsons, basically being stuck in this waiting room for almost 10 hours. And the idea of how these people would deal with their grief and somehow come together to keep the country going.
It's interesting to think about that time in history as being populated by people rather than as mythical figures. You know, we look upon the presidency as being something kind of above the rest of the culture, a kind of an overseer. And so the president and the staff surrounding the president might seem like they're, like, again, they're somehow of another culture, right? But instead, these are actually just human beings trying to experience very human emotions on a real level.
Right, and especially in Jackie's case, here you have this woman, this married woman who has just watched her husband be killed, but she also happens to be the First Lady of the United States.
Absolutely. She has a cross to bear for an entire people.
Mm-hmm.
And not just the country, but around the world. So the process of her grief is something substantially different from what it might have to be if she were just an average person, and yet she has to go through that in addition to everything else that she does.
Caitlin, you wrote three poems about this event, the events surrounding JFK's assassination, and the opera actually grew out of those, didn't it?
Right. So the three poems were written from Jackie's perspective immediately after JFK's death, and the three of them actually became her Act One aria, which is the Rose aria, in which she talks about the fact that in Dallas, she was given a bouquet of red roses, but every other city they visited gave her yellow. So the idea of that seeming like it was, you know, looking ahead somehow, you know, they knew something that she didn't. So from that, it just, there was so much more to the story, and I wanted to look at the secretaries and look at the priest and all these other characters who had similar reactions to what had happened.
So there are other characters in the opera besides,
yes,
the Johnsons and Mrs. Kennedy.
Right. So we have Jackie and Bobby Kennedy, of course, and we have Lady Bird and Lyndon Johnson. Then the three secretaries who were very close to JFK, his personal secretary, social secretary, press secretary. And then we have the hospital staff. We have JFK's personal physician and the nurse who was in the emergency room at Parkland. And then finally, the priest who administered the last rites.
Joshua, let's talk about the music for this opera. You've written other operatic works, but this is your first full-length opera, yes?
That is true, yes. Obviously, when you embark on an hour and a half long piece of music, you set a pretty monumental task. And it's not really the duration of this piece, actually, that made it so difficult. Obviously, I was going to devote months to the composition of it. It's the subject matter is so inherently dark. It was difficult to really wrap myself up in that work and then come out of it at the end of the workday to kind of resume a normal life. It really became a kind of an obsessive project. As I think all operas do to a certain degree, you're living lives in other characters and trying to imagine a sound world that would work with them, sounds that they would themselves be thinking or a world that they would be experiencing. Yes, certainly the act of composition in this particular piece was drastically different from what I usually experience.
Was your musical language different from your other compositions or no?
Yes, actually, it's surprisingly different. I've had a fair amount of training under a lot of very rigorous composers, and so I'm used to writing in a style that has a great deal of theoretical background to it, that assumes that the listeners are not only extremely musically educated, but they have very high aesthetic choices in their tastes. Whereas this piece, it seemed more and more that as I was imagining the characters, I was imagining them more and more complexly as they became less mythological and more human. The music had to come not necessarily down out of a theoretical cloud, but it had to become more and more human, more expressive, more real and connective on a kind of one-to-one level, rather than trying to express something that would be best read in a treatise.
Let's talk about the Figaro Project. It's been around since 2009, yes?
Yeah, that's right.
And what is the company's mission?
Basically, our goal is to promote local artists and to present opera in accessible and affordable ways. I think that right now, you know, with all the arts funding still sort of at risk, it's really important for us to keep going and come up with new ways to present opera and keep the art form alive when we have less money available to us. So that's something we really try and do. We also focus a lot on contemporary opera. It's really important for the genre to really have works that speak to the context of our time and who we are as a people right now.
This is Camelot Requiem being presented as part of the Spire series at First and Franklin Presbyterian Church in Baltimore, 210 West Madison Street. This is presented by the Figaro Project Friday, May 10th and Saturday, May 11th at 7:30 p.m. The phone number for more information is 410-728-5545. There is information online as well at firstfranklin.org. With me in the studio today, librettist Caitlin Vincent and composer Joshua Bornfield. We've been talking about Camelot Requiem, their brand new opera premiering this weekend. Very exciting. Thanks for coming in, both of you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much.
For WBJC, I'm Diana Neal.